Over the past few weeks, you've heard me make reference to that statement that Jesus made on the night that he was to be betrayed, where he told his disciples, "In this world, you will have trouble." As you look around at the world, we have no shortage of trouble, do we? Social unrest, global pandemic, economic uncertainties, political factions, job insecurities, and the list goes on and on and on. There appears to be very little good news these days, and things don't seem to be moving in a positive direction. In light of all this, I'd like to take a number of weeks and talk about life in this world. Specifically, I want to address some of the troubles that we are likely to face in this world and how we can overcome them as we anxiously, eagerly anticipate the return of Christ and he ushers in the end of all these troubles. I've entitled the message today, "Confidence in the Midst of Criticism." When Jesus talked about the trouble in this world, I think he talked about it both from a general sense and a specific sense. Generally, everybody's going to face trouble in a world that has fallen. And then specifically, as believers, he talked about the fact that there will be people who will be against you because of me. So, not me, but him. So, we shouldn't be surprised when we face criticism from those who are outside of the body of Christ. It's only as the Holy Spirit works in them that they are brought to the realization that what they are critical of is actually what they are most in need of. And so when we face these kinds of criticisms, I think we generally expect a little bit of that. But what we don't usually think about or expect is when we are recipients of similar kinds of criticism from those who we are close to, those who we are fellow believers that bring criticisms. And yet I would guess that most of us, if not all of us, can attest to having been the victim of undeserved criticism from a family member. We're not the first to have been treated this way by our brothers and sisters. King David, a man after God's own heart, understood what it is like to be rejected and mocked and judged by his own family and countrymen. And yet, he did not shrink in fear, and he did not quit under the pressure of despair. Instead, he found hope and confidence and strength in the heat of his troubles. His victory teaches us that we can experience confidence in the midst of criticism. And the secret to finding confidence when we are hard-pressed is to plead our case before the Lord and to place our trust in him to bring us through. So I'm going to look at Psalm 3. It's not a very long psalm. But Psalm number 3 that David wrote in a time of despair, in a time of criticism. The title of Psalm 3 reads, "A Psalm of David when he fled from his son Absalom." Lord, how many are my foes? How many rise up against me? Many are saying of me, "God will not deliver him." But you, Lord, are a shield around me, my glory, the one who lifts my head high. I call to the Lord and he answers me from his holy mountain. I lie down and sleep. I awake again because the Lord sustains me. I will not fear, though tens of thousands assail me on every side. Arise, Lord, deliver me, my God. Strike all my enemies on the jaw. Break the teeth of the wicked. From the Lord comes deliverance. May your blessing be on your people. In the first two verses, David laments his situation. The title again of this psalm reads, A Psalm of David When He Fled From His Son Absalom. I've explained in other messages on the Psalms that this title is an editorial note that was inserted at a later date by a scribe, and it represents the traditional understanding of the conditions under which the psalmist wrote these words. And then again, there's no good reason to doubt that this is the occasion that gave rise to these words. The account of David fleeing from his son Absalom is recorded in 2 Samuel chapters 15 through 18. You don't need to turn there. You can just make a note. Absalom, we are told, had a falling out with his father David because he had murdered his half-brother Amnon. For a time, he was not permitted to enter his father's presence, but later he was forgiven and welcomed back. But their relationship was forever strained. Upon his return to Jerusalem, Absalom began to act in a very scheming manner toward all the people who desired to meet with King David to have their problems solved. And this is what he did. He would stop each one of them as they were making their way to the king, and he would shower them with affection, and he would plant the idea in their heads that, well, if I were made king, you would get that justice that you deserve right away. And by his actions, he won the hearts of the people. Now, when Absalom was certain that he had gained sufficient support to enact his coup, he deceived his father into allowing him to go to the city of Hebron in order to fulfill a vow he said that he made before the Lord. But once he arrived there, he set up his headquarters, and the announcement was made, Absalom is king in Hebron. Well, David knew that Absalom's influence was too great for him to overcome in that moment, that he had swayed too many people to his side. And so he left the palace and he went into hiding. Now, if you know anything about David, running for his life was nothing new to him. He'd done this before, before the enraged and jealous King Saul, who sought his life for a long time after he had been anointed king. But this time, it was his own son who conspired against him. And it was those whom he had faithfully governed who turned against him. While in exile, then, David penned the words of this psalm. As David considered his situation, all he could see were the many who were standing against him. Three times here, in these opening verses, he says many. And if we were to tie this together with what he says in verse 6, the number that opposed him could have been in the tens of thousands. And that is many, even by our standards. These three references to the many are progressive in nature. He first states that the number of his foes is many. Then he says that many rise up against me and join his enemies. This tells us that the opposition is growing here. And then finally, there's a group of many who are the skeptics. They stand and declare, God will not deliver him. This phrase literally means, he has no deliverance in God. And what the mockers intended to communicate was that all of his life, David had set his heart on following God, and now he has been abandoned by God, whom he had served so diligently and in whom he had put his trust, that the carpet has been pulled out from under him. to the skeptics as they looked upon the situation. It was their conclusion that God had forsaken David. David was in a dire situation. How did he respond to it? What was the solution that he sought out? While it's true that David had many enemies, and those who would join them, and those who would scoff at him, he focused on a greater truth. He knew that no matter what others might do, what others might think, what others might say, God is different. He is unchanging. He is dependable. David knew him to be the one who many years ago had said to another struggling leader, "I will never leave you or forsake you. Never." Look at David's response in verse 3. "But you, Lord, are a shield around me. My glory, the one who lifts my head high." See, instead of blaming God for his circumstances and turning from God, David turned to God and held to the confidence that he had not rejected him. Donald Williams gives this great reminder. Whenever adversity strikes, we have a choice. We can turn from God, or we can turn to God. We can use suffering to justify unbelief, or we can use suffering as a spur to belief. David chose to turn to God. And David's turning to God is expressed in two ways in these verses. The first thing he did was to resolve to cling to the truth. To cling to the truth. If we want to experience confidence in the midst of criticism, then we must look to God and hold on to the truth about him. We must remain confident that God will always be on our side, that he never turns his back on his children. Never. When we are faced with trouble, our first response should be one of drawing closer to God and relying on him to see us through. James Montgomery Boyce makes this powerful observation. He says, "When a believer gazes too long at his enemies, the forces arrayed against him seem to grow in size until it appears to be overwhelming. But when he turns his thoughts to God, God is seen in his true great stature, and the enemies shrink to manageable proportions." David refers to God here as a shield around him. As you may know, a shield is a weapon of defense, not offense. It provides protection against the attacks of the enemy. And by referring to God as his shield, David is saying that he places himself under the protection of God. That is, he has resigned himself to allow God to do the fighting for him and to keep him from harm. And he says that God is his glory, my glory. And this word, my glory, it refers to God's overwhelming presence with him. Like David, we need to keep in mind that God's presence is greater than any human foe that may ever threaten us. And it is because of God's presence that David could say, while in the midst of his troubles, in the midst of them, who lifts my head high. Sounds counterintuitive, doesn't it? We want to duck down when there's trouble, not lift it high. I want you to notice here that David didn't say, he may lift my head high, leaving room for the possibility he might be wrong. Nor did he say, he will lift my head high, indicating that at some future time this will take place. Rather, he confidently exclaims, again, in the midst of his problems, he lifts my head high. A present reality, regardless of what the external circumstances around him might otherwise indicate. David's confidence was not in his knowledge of the future, nor in the might of his forces. David's confidence was in God. Second way that David turned to God was through crying out to him in prayer. And you'll notice here in verse 4 that David not only looked to God and clung to the truth about him, but he looked to him in prayer. He says, I call out to the Lord and he answers me from his holy mountain. If we want to experience confidence in the midst of criticism, then we must take our need to the Lord and ask him to enable us to make it through. After turning to God, and again we said turning to God was holding fast to the truth and seeking his help in prayer, David secondly put his trust in God. Turn to God, trust in God. And because he put his trust in God, he was able to experience those precious commodities that we all long for when life hits us hard. You see what he says here? I lie down and sleep. I wake up because the Lord sustains me. I will not fear, though tens of thousands assail me on every side. Anne Alexander once wrote, the circumstances of life, the events of life, and the people around me in life do not make me what I am, but reveal what I am. Now, I don't know about you, but when I find myself pushed into a corner, I know that my natural inclination is to try to figure a way out on my own. I dwell on the situation for an extended period of time. I begin conniving and planning how I'm going to get out of this mess or how I'm going to clear my name. And the process doesn't go into park when the lights go off and I'm lying in bed. Oh no. At least for me, that's just when the juices get flowing. And the wheels start turning at full speed. I can lie there for hours just thinking about what was said, thinking about what was done, thinking about what I think was said and done, and what I'm going to do about it. And before you know it, it's time to get up and get going again. And the only thing I've accomplished is losing a night of rest worrying about how I'm going to remedy my situation because I've only trusted in me. And I've forgotten that my only trustworthy resource is God, and that I need to carry my concerns to him. I want you to listen closely to these sage words from Mark Futato. He says, not self-reliance, but prayer is the path to finding protection from otherwise insurmountable foes. Not self-reliance, but prayer is the path to finding protection. I want everyone to see the pattern that is emerging here in these verses. Verses 1 and 2, David laments his situation, but he does not allow it to cause him to blame God. Instead, in verse 3, he looks to God, turns to him. Verse 4, he cries out, prays to him. And then in verses 5 and 6, he places his complete trust in God, and as a result, he's able to rest peacefully with no fear about what the future may hold. And I'm sure that had David overlooked any one of those steps along the way, he would not have experienced the confidence, the rest, and freedom from fear. Final verses contain David's prayer for deliverance and expression of hope. Now back in verse 4, there was this generic reference to David calling out to God for help. Verse 7 contains the words of that prayer. He said, "Arise, Lord, deliver me, my God. Strike all my enemies on the jaw. Break the teeth of the wicked." David, I see some of the smiles out there. Go, David. Yeah. David is very deliberate and purposeful in his choice of words as he invokes God in prayer. Now, if we look closely at what he says, it becomes apparent that his petition is one of asking God to prove his enemies wrong. That's what he's really saying here. I want you to prove my enemies wrong. Notice, he says, "Arise, Lord." And this is set in opposition to the fact that what? Many had arisen against him. Many, many, many. "Arise, Lord," to the many. The skeptic said that God would not deliver him. But what does David pray? "Deliver me, my God." Prove him wrong. His prayer is one of confidence and hope in the one who had delivered him many times in the past. So in effect, David is praying, "My enemies say that you have forsaken me. Show them that you can be trusted." And he moves on here to use some very strong, even violent language against his enemies. And if we were to take these words at their face value, they would suggest that David's desire is to see his enemies physically suffer for the injustices that they have brought against him. And they are probably deserving of it. But I believe there's another way of interpreting the meaning of these phrases. And in this case, David is employing the use of metaphors rather than asking God to literally commit these acts against his maligners. The phrase, "strike all my enemies on the jaw," is an expression describing an act of humiliation. I'm sure that you've seen a movie, maybe you've witnessed it in person, where somebody slaps somebody across the face. And what really hurts in that moment is not so much the physical act of being slapped, but the intention behind it. It shows contempt and disregard. To receive a slap in the face is quite humiliating. So David is actually saying here, "Lord, humiliate them for what they have done to me." And then to break the teeth of the wicked is this very graphic way of saying, "Render my enemies powerless." A picture here is one of comparing his enemies to a wild animal and what is a wild animal's ultimate weapon for and key to survival? Teeth. With them it kills and devours the prey. And to break the teeth of an animal would then, in essence, strip it of its ability to conquer its foe and eventually lead to its demise. So David is asking to strip his enemies of their power over him. Prove them wrong, God. finally, David ends with an expression of hope. And he says, "From the Lord comes deliverance. May your blessing be on your people." Once again, in contrast to the scandalous words that were spoken against them, or against him, David reaffirms his hope that God will deliver him. This is a hope that all believers can possess, even enjoy in times of despair and seeming hopelessness. As I stand before you today, I have no way of knowing what kinds of adversity each of you may have faced this past week, or what are some of the things that you may be dreading later today or this week to come. Maybe you feel like you're going through an experience similar to David's. Their enemies out to get you. Their number seems to be increasing. They're pressing in all around you, and they're laughing at you for holding your trust in God. They mock you. God will not deliver you. Here's a reminder. The reality is, your circumstances are out of your control. They're out of my control. There's nothing that you and I can do to change them in our own strength. Now the crucial question becomes, how are you going to respond to your situation? How are you going to respond then to the situations in life that come your way? You got a choice. You can do it using your tried and tested way. That is, you can sit around and try to figure out how you're going to get out of this alive and how you're going to get even. You can stay up all night if you like. But before you spend too much time doing it that way, I encourage you to stop long enough to remember how it turned out the last time you employed that solution. Yes, you can choose to do it using your best reasoning powers and resourcefulness, or you can do it the way David did. Instead of looking to yourself for the answer, try looking to the only true answer to the trials of life. Like David, begin by turning to God. You'll immediately find that, unlike those who seek to harm you, he only desires what is best for you. He is patiently waiting for you to take a look into his loving face and to find that he is on your side. Then trust. He has never failed you, and you won't be disappointed by him. By committing your cares to him and trusting him to work out all the details according to his might instead of your own, you'll be able to get the rest that you need. And you'll find release from the fears that have gripped your heart. Then pray. Cry out to him the deepest feelings of your heart. Tell him exactly how and where it hurts. Just be real with him. He's always ready to listen and powerful to deliver. then finally, hope. Look forward to God moving on your behalf and rescuing you from your difficulties. In the midst of your troubles, don't be fooled by what you see and you hear. Hold on to the belief that God is at work, that He is in control, and that He will deliver you. Friends, God is waiting for an opportunity to prove Himself to be faithful. Will you give Him the chance? Your circumstances may not change immediately. I'm not making those kinds of promises. I don't think they changed immediately for David. In fact, we read he had to go to war against his son. But you are certain to find confidence in the midst of criticism when your trust is in Him. Amen.